The City of San Antonio Revitalize SA Corridor Leadership Program offers no-cost training for those interested in neighborhood commercial corridor revitalization. Over 9 months, participants will obtain leadership and strategy skills and have an opportunity for grant funding. Applications at sanantonio.gov/EDD/revitalizeSA. This nonprofit message is underwritten by the Economic Development Department.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how the Trump anti-immigration crackdown could impact Texas agriculture. We hear from Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller.
It's not as affecting agriculture as much as people think.
We're already seeing that people are not going to work. They're not sending their children to school.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Monday, Donald Trump was sworn in as U.S. president and swiftly went to work signing a record 26 executive orders on day one. Many of Trump's executive orders concern immigration. In the National Border Emergency Declaration, the Trump administration states its intention to use the military to crack down on illegal immigration, combat transnational gangs and drug trafficking, and execute his promised mass deportation of undocumented migrants. There is a concern about how these orders will impact the American economy. While Trump is acting on his campaign promises, this was an issue that propelled his election back into the White House. There is a concern about how these orders will impact the American economy. It's well known that as immigrants are demonized with lies in the right-wing media for eating cats and dogs and bringing crime and disease into the country, there is an inexhaustible demand for the cheap labor of the migrants. Traditionally, this has been the case in agriculture. I spoke with Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller about this. Miller is a Republican and a major supporter of Donald Trump.
Well, it's not as affecting agriculture as much as people think. We used to use a lot of illegal labor, but we really don't anymore. We've gotten into the agriculture 3.0, which is technology. So we've got cows that milk themselves, tractors that drive themselves. We can harvest most of all of our crops mechanically, including vegetables now. So we're not near as dependent on them. And the last thing that we want to do is have all of our hands braided and wake up and there's nobody to milk the cows one morning. So we're not as dependent on it as people think.
And so that's an exaggeration, or it's been worked around, not a concern? You're not hearing anything?
It's really not a concern. I haven't really had anybody that has a concern over that, because they're really not. We don't actually work that many of them. I think most of them that are employed may be in the service industry or construction or something like that.
Well, there are the visa situation that they have for migrant workers. That seems to be a very robust program. Do you want that to continue, or should that be restricted?
Now, we like the H-2A program, that guest worker program for agriculture, and we do use that, and we maximize that out. That's a good program, and maybe we need to expand that some. It actually needs tweaking.
How would you like it tweaked?
Well, for one, they can only be here 10 months. But we need a 12-month program, because if you're running a dairy, you don't, you know, quit after 10 months. So you get somebody trained and going good, and then they have to leave. So that's not working very well.
Right, even though the it could be 10 months, but the average visa was given for 6 months. And
right,
just over 378,000 positions were available in the most recent year, so 2023.
Right. It needs some work, because if somebody 6 months, they don't return, they just kind of slip off in the shadows, that slot doesn't get filled with someone new. It's still considered an occupied slot.
The issue of water continues to be a concern, and you've been a person who has been calling for waking up to the fact that we're running out of water. We see that the legislature is talking about a big water plan. What would you like to see in a water bill that would address our water crunch?
But immediately, we need infrastructure. We need to fix our infrastructure. Some of our largest cities, including San Antonio and Austin and Dallas and Houston, the time they receive their water to they deliver it to the customers lose 30%. That's just bad infrastructure. We need to fix that. And a lot of cases in rural Texas, the systems are really old, and it's even worse. So we've got to fix our leaky pipes, if to put it a very simple way.
Governor Abbott has put forth an idea of massive, they've called it the water grid. I'm sure you've heard of it, trying to move water around the state. That's expensive. It's a giant program. Would that help?
Yeah, it would help, but I don't think it'll ever happen. It's too, it's just not feasible. In my, you know, what's feasible is rainwater harvesting, desal, catching stormwater drainage, building off-channel storage for our farmers, recycling wastewater. There's a whole lot more we can do and get done quicker and faster than that.
We've seen a conflict between cities wanting water and pulling it away from agricultural use. We need the water in ag to grow food. So do we need someone, you know, running the show to making sure that we're not going to completely deplete our agriculture for green lawns and city use?
Well, we have the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality oversees that. Texas Water Development Board a little bit has to do with that. So you're exactly right. I mean, it's a tug of war between the cities and agriculture. That's very evident in the Rio Grande Valley. We lost our sugar cane. There's no more sugar cane crops. We ran out of water. So the last plant closed. We pushed up 6,000 acres of citrus. Our vegetable farmers down there grow four, five, six crops a year. They've had enough water to grow one. We can't stay in business like that. So agriculture is going to fold up if we don't solve this water crisis.
The THC from the hemp, we've heard and very well documented how this has become a problem of a very strong THC products getting in the hands of kids. And so we've heard from the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he wants to crack down on this THC situation. How does that impact the hemp growers that have been licensed now in Texas?
You know, it doesn't impact us very much, actually. We had, at a high point, I think we had 1,600 hemp growers. We're down to less than 500 now. And the reason for that is there's no profit in it. We grew too much of it. So there's plenty on-hand stock. We're not going to run out. But I do agree with Dan Patrick. We need to address this issue because right now it's the Wild Wild West. Since I wrote the hemp rules, there's a couple more products that didn't exist, Delta 8 and Delta 9, which is basically acts exactly like marijuana. So we don't have any rules addressing that. So a seventh grader can go in a gas station and buy THC gummies, Delta 9 gummies, go to school and pass them out. That's not against the law, but it's not a good situation. So we need to address an age limit. We know we need to go through and decide if we want to allow the Delta 8, Delta 9 products to continually be sold. So I'm glad that they're looking at it because what we've got right now is not working.
Rural health care continues to be an issue. The hospitals in the rural parts of Texas are struggling. What needs to be done in order to provide more access to health care for the rural parts of the state to make those areas more viable and attractive to invest in?
Well, number one, and hopefully the Trump administration will do this, you know, cut the regulations and you know, get the government's boot off their neck. Reimbursement rates are at a point now where it's not profitable for them. They struggle to stay open. We help with that. I run the Office of Rural Health Care. That's part of the Texas Department of Agriculture. Our jobs and duties is to deliver health care in 191 rural counties across the state, but it's a real challenge. We used to have rural hospitals close all the time, but under my administration, that is a rarity now. Very seldom does it happen because we're on top of it. We try to make sure that doesn't happen.
We have Donald Trump talking about tariffs in a major way. We've seen tariffs often fall on the back of farmers in Texas. If there are tariff wars, it impacted soy producers quite a bit last go around. Are you concerned about how it could impact, you know, farmers and ranchers in Texas?
Not at all. And that, the tariff war was the best thing ever happened to the American farmer. And yes, we got, you know, some prices went down, but Donald Trump, you know, I can't remember how many billions of dollars he sent out to the farmers. He kept them whole. No one lost any money. And then when the prices came back, we made more money than we'd ever made. The commodities were the best prices we've ever gotten. But under the Biden administration, that all went south, and we haven't made any money in 4 years. So I'm very excited about Donald Trump being back fighting for the American farmer, using tariffs as a bargaining tool. China's all, you know, he threatened China with a 10%. They've already agreed that they're going to start buying more agriculture products from us. And, you know, don't put in the 10% tariff, not needed. We'll buy some stuff from you. That's the art of the deal. That's the way it works. So it's been very effective. I expect Mexico will, you know, heed the same call for the 25% tariffs, stop the fentanyl from coming in, help us close the border just like they did before. So I don't think they'll actually be implemented, the 25% against Canada or Mexico. I think they're going to help us out.
And in the renewable energy, clean energy, a lot of farmers and ranchers have like those big propellers, those turbines. And they are providing another source of income, and they like that. Is that in jeopardy if there is a rejection of renewable energy in Texas by the Trump administration?
I don't think those are going away. There's going to be restrictions on offshore wind energy. Trump has already said that. He doesn't like them. It's killing the whales but he hasn't really said anything about restricting wind energy on land. So I don't see that as being restricted.
Well, what would you like to see? What's your top wish list item for this legislature to help, the farmers of Texas?
Well, I want them to address the water shortage, and I believe they will. We haven't talked about this, but I want to make sure that we stop our enemies from buying any more of our farmland and like China and spying on our military bases. And I want to make sure that we close the border. And I think that will happen. And then I want to solve this agriculture trade deficit. It's very dangerous when we're relying on a foreign country to feed us. Our freedoms are in jeopardy. That's we've got to reverse that. Those are the top four priorities for me in the agriculture.
Sid Miller is the Texas Agriculture Commissioner. Backing up to the claim that Miller made that offshore wind kills whales, there is no scientific evidence linking offshore wind energy development to whale fatalities. Federal agencies have found no connection between whale mortalities and offshore wind activities. The claim that offshore wind energy results in whale deaths has been labeled disinformation. Comprehensive reviews by federal agencies and marine scientists have consistently found no evidence to support these claims. We also need to circle back to the statement from Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller that Donald Trump's mass deportation will have a negligible impact on Texas agriculture production. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and other studies estimate that 50 to 70% of hired farm workers are undocumented immigrants. The National Agriculture Workers Survey has reported that approximately 73% of farm workers are foreign-born, and among these, a large percentage lack legal status. Labor-intensive crops like fruits, vegetables, and nuts are particularly reliant on undocumented labor. These require hand-picking and delicate handling, which is not easily mechanized. The dairy sector also depends on undocumented workers, with some studies suggesting they make up about 50% of that workforce. Undocumented agriculture workers contribute significantly to the U.S. economy by ensuring food production at a low cost. And without that labor, those production costs will rise. So if Miller is mistaken, and there is a reduction in the availability of undocumented labor for agriculture, and we need that labor, then we will see the impact at the grocery store. Studies predict that stricter immigration policies could lead to a decline in agricultural output, and that means higher prices, and also shifts in crop production to less labor-intensive crops. And this is already happening, even before the ICE raids have started. fear of deportation has led to a sharp drop in farm workers' attendance across California's agricultural heartline, leaving crops unharvested in the fields. And this is a direct result of Donald Trump's announced immigration crackdown. The California nonprofit news site CalMatters reports farm workers are not showing up to harvest crops. Kathleen Bush Joseph, a policy analyst at the Migration Policy Institute, said America does need migrant labor, and there could be a response to the Trump immigration crackdown with a call for increased visas for farm workers.
There could be a call for actually more legal immigration in response to this. The Biden administration really increased the number of visas available for some of these agricultural workers and temporary workers to come into the country. And we could see a call for more of those in response to this.
Bush Joseph said the immigration crackdown is having a wide-range impact across America in multiple economic sectors.
We're already seeing that people are not going to work. They're not sending their children to school. And all of that has a massive impact on local communities. You know, the U.S. is still a country of immigrants. And when people see that, there's so much of this language about invasion and, using the Alien Enemies Act, that could potentially disincentivize migrants from coming here in the future. And it could impact the sectors of the economy that really rely on immigrants, in particular, hospitality, construction, and agriculture. We know that the unauthorized immigrant population works around the country. And in certain states and cities, they make up a large part of the workforce. So if suddenly many of them are deported or are not able to go to work out of fear of being deported, I think that that will have very real impacts on the output of the economy, whether there is enough food available, and whether there are people constructing the houses that we so desperately need.
The Migration Policy Institute this week published an analysis breaking down the new Trump immigration policies in an article called "With Shock and Awe: The Second Trump Term Opens with a Bid to Strongly Reshape Immigration." Kathleen Bush Joseph was a co-author.
We saw really sweeping announcements, and many of them were absolutely unprecedented. So the Trump administration immediately released 10 executive orders focused on immigration. The effect of those orders was to, quote unquote, suspend entry at the southwest border and set up an apparatus for mass deportations.
That's what he told people he was going to do on the campaign trail. So was he just putting into action what he had promised?
In many ways, what these initial announcements are promising is action that has yet to take place. So in many instances, these laid the groundwork for what the Trump administration hopes to achieve. But there are very real barriers to hitting the numbers that they seek.
Right. The numbers that they seek, 11 to 13, 14 million undocumented people in the United States, and he wants to remove all of them. Is that the objective?
He said that he does want to remove the entire unauthorized population. There have also been recent developments that he might even remove people who are allowed in legally under the Biden administration. But I think we need to be clear here. It will not be possible to remove the entire unauthorized immigrant population.
So we saw immediately when he took office that the CPB1 app went dark. That had an immediate impact with people who were hoping to apply for asylum at the border. Also, people who had recently come in on that app, they were wondering about their future appointments. What is the significance of shutting down this app?
Yeah, this is hugely significant because the Biden administration had put it in place to try to channel people to orderly entry, to come to lawful ports of entry where they could be processed and the government had the information that they needed, the background information For example, these measures not being in place raise questions about whether people will now try to cross unlawfully and evade detection. They also raise very real questions about access to protection. The Trump administration announcements have the effect of barring access to asylum, which, you know, seems to be in tension with U.S. law and international obligations, which provide that the U.S. has to provide that access.
What did he do with the Cubans and Venezuelans with the parole?
The initial announcement was that the program allowing new people to come in would be halted. And then just last night, we found out that people who had already come in with this temporary status might have that status canceled, and they might be subject to a fast deportation process called expedited removal. That process does not involve the immigration courts and can happen in just a matter of hours. So it raises real concerns about access to counsel and to these humanitarian protections people might be eligible for.
It's likely we're going to see a lot of expedited expulsions. People who don't go through immigration court, don't have appeals, they're going to be just put on a bus or a plane and sent across the border. Is that right?
That is right. And, you know, the Trump administration moved to expand the pool of people eligible for this really fast process. And under U.S. law, people who've been in the country for less than 2 years and who don't have lawful status or a claim to asylum can be removed this way.
And so they could just be picked up at a workplace and then sent someplace else outside of the United States, never have a chance to inform their families or finish up any business that they have. They're just gone.
That's right. And this raises concerns about whether lawful permanent residents or even U.S. citizens could be mistakenly deported through this procedure. And that has happened before, actually. ICE has mistakenly deported U.S. citizens in the past. And, you know, that's why access to counsel and people knowing their rights is so important.
We've also heard from the Trump administration that they're no longer going to respect the sanctuary or sensitive areas, including churches, schools, and hospitals. The idea that schools are now a place where immigration raids can take place, that has an incredible chilling effect. Tell me more about what this policy, why we had it in the first place, and what it could mean now moving forward.
Absolutely. So the sensitive locations policy had a few different rationales behind it, but a really, I think, you know, comprehensible example is that immigrants are sometimes the victims of crimes, and police need their help to be prosecuting cases against criminals. But if immigrants fear that they'll be picked up and deported from a courthouse, they might not be willing to come forward and provide evidence and testify in cases. So the Biden administration, like previous administrations, had put in place this policy that said, okay, we're not going to arrest people there. Likewise with schools, you know, people are already reportedly not sending their children to school because they're worried about either being arrested, dropping their children off, or their children being arrested potentially.
And then some will not go to church.
You know, churches were such a driving factor in the sanctuary movement too. And we've seen the Trump administration say that, you know, it could prosecute local officials and people who stand in their way when they're trying to enforce immigration law.
Is that part of his Alien Enemies Act that he has invoked?
You know, that's an additional announcement. And the Trump administration has invoked that as a possible basis for going after cartel members who it may designate as enemies, quote unquote, under this act. And that would potentially facilitate their expedited removal without access to protections like some of these other moves.
That was used during World War II. And wasn't that used as the basis for setting up internment camps for Japanese Americans, German Americans, and others.
That's right. And, you know, this move is absolutely unprecedented in that the Trump administration is saying that even at a time of peace, that we're being quote unquote invaded by migrant arrivals. But, you know, I have to note here that arrivals now are actually lower than when the Trump administration left office last time. So there's a really inherent tension in these arguments that the administration is making.
Now, the Trump administration is also, they're saying they're hitting a pause on refugee resettlement. Who is impacted by that?
Yeah, so we've seen reports that Afghans who had been approved for traveling to the United States have been blocked because of this announcement. And the Biden administration had hit a record level of 100,000 refugees resettled in fiscal year 2024. But we could see the number plummet if the Trump administration allows resettlement to restart, which isn't clear.
Afghans, these were people who helped us when our military was in Afghanistan.
Yes. And then, you know, we've seen people from around the world be resettled in the United States, which is a long history of being a global leader in refugee resettlement. But under the first Trump administration, they also slashed arrivals. And Canada actually became a leader because of that. Restrictions on access to protections and halting these refugee pathways, among other moves, does raise the question about, you know, whether the U.S. is upholding its obligations in the international community.
Congress has now passed through the House and through the Senate the Lincoln-Riley Act, requiring authorities to detain non-citizens arrested for certain crimes. And that seems to be the first thing that Trump would be able to sign into law in his new administration. Mm-hmm. What are the concerns of the fallout of the Lincoln-Riley Act?
Yeah, you know, this is a really interesting move by Congress in that they are mandating that ICE detain more people, but not providing the funds to do so. So ICE itself has said that it would need some $27 billion to be able to detain all of the people designated under this law, but they don't have that money. And they're actually already operating at a shortfall of hundreds of millions of dollars currently. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns though about how much it would actually cost, especially when we're not clear on how much military or National Guard involvement there could be.
You know, you show me your budget and you tell me your priorities. So if Congress isn't willing to come up with the billions of dollars, and we're talking a lot of billions of dollars, in order to follow through on this agenda, it makes me wonder if this is all just show.
You know, I think there is a lot of hope within the Trump administration officials that all of these announcements actually create enough fear in the immigrant community that some people end up leaving themselves. You know, there have been initial reports of individuals, quote unquote, self-deporting, but, you know, whether numbers increase significantly is uncertain, especially because we don't have data on the number of self-deportations.
Kathleen Bush Joseph is a policy analyst at the Migration Policy Institute. She co-authored the report with Shock and Awe, The Second Trump Term Opens with a Bid to Strongly Reshape Immigration. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters at tpr.org, and you can download us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.